Blog Talk Radio.
You are now listening to Kings of Non Sequitur. Any topic, any subject, anything goes. With your hosts, Jay and Dre.
Welcome in. You have indeed got Kings of Non Sequitur, the off-season version of In Much Less Detail, the podcast, here with you live on a Monday night, May the 23rd, 2022. I'm Dre. He's Jay. We're here to get a hot fire hour of hot sports talk with some other talk mixed in. Basically, we're going to do what we always do on Kings of Non Sequitur, which is talk about whatever the hell we want to talk about and go in whatever direction we feel like going, which is kind of how we do things. I'm coming to you from my home studio down here in beautiful suburban Memphis, Tennessee. Jason is coming to you from his home in central Wisconsin. Jay, how's things going so far this spring?
Good. I can't complain too much. Allergies are rough this year. I feel like I'm walking around with one eye open and the nose is running, and so it's allergy season. Everything here is starting to bloom, and it just makes it so much fun.
Yeah, it's been a bad year for allergies down here too. It hasn't really got me too bad, but yeah, there's a lot of people I know that are just. My coworker today was sitting there draining all day, basically, which not fun to listen to.
No, it's just as I'm getting older, it just feels like it's getting worse and worse. So for people who listen to this show as we go forward, it's eventually going to just turn into old men griping.
Get off my lawn.
That's right. We'll call it the Get Off My Lawn podcast.
Wait, old men griping? Hang on. So I had a tooth pulled a couple of weeks ago. So I'll get started with the old man. I'll trump your old men griping about your allergies. You think allergies is nothing, something? I had my last wisdom tooth pulled two weeks ago tomorrow.
Those are the worst.
Oh my God.
I had them all done at the same time a few years ago. I went through that on the show, but
no, I don't think so.
Oh man.
And at the same time. Woo.
Yeah. I had them all taken out.
This truly is the old men show. we're sitting here gumming everything because we ain't got no teeth. I held on to this last one forever and ever, but it was like yellow and rotting, and there's a
the
cavity was so big that food was continuously getting trapped in there, and finally the nerve started killing me a couple weeks ago, and I was like, gotta get this taken care of, but I couldn't do it with my actual dentist because this wonderful society that we live in. We can't see you until a month from now.
Right.
This is an emergency. I understand, but we have no dentist. We have nobody available. There's nothing we can do. Okay, fine. So I wound up having to go to, and I've gone to this place before. I don't know how much I talked about it on the show because it's been some years, but University of Tennessee has a dental school here in downtown Memphis. And I got some very good discount work done several years ago when I was basically just starting to sort of distrust the regular dentist that I had and the work, the shoddy work that she had been doing. And I'm not dealing with that dentist anymore. This is a whole new dental agency that I'm dealing with now that told me, we can't see you for a month, even though it's an emergency. So I went back to the dental school. And on the website, I was able to read that they will do emergency work in the mornings if you get there between the hours of 7 and 9:30. And that's a very specific time frame. But I, called in sick and said, I'll make the drive down there. I know where it is, and I'll give it a shot. And it was not a short line. I didn't really expect it to be because it's. And it's not free, by the way. It was there's a fee to it, but interestingly enough, they had a credit They had money on my account from 4 years from the work I had done 4 or 5 years ago. And so I was able to get it for a little bit of a discount. I actually got about 50% cheaper than it normally costs. So that was an added bonus.
Wait a minute.
That was cool.
They just kept your money for that long.
Right. They didn't tell me that I had that money on the books.
Right.
They just put my name in and said, oh, look at this.
It's a miracle.
Extra money you've got. Uh-huh.
So if you had never gone back there, they would have just kept
their
money.
They would have just kept it. Yeah. So.
I get that's good news, but it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I'm looking at both sides here.
I was meant to go back there. Is what that means to me. Is fate was meaning for me to once again return to the University of Tennessee Dental School downtown Memphis. Yeah. So I had it yanked and. So, we're talking student dentists. And so there's two of them that are taking care of me, and they're both, you know, looked like pretty decent shaped young men. They were tall. They were thin, so I don't know. But, you know, just because you're thin doesn't mean you're weak. I thought they were, you know, pretty strong-looking guys, pretty young-looking guys. Now, I warned them, look, guys, the last time I had a tooth pull, it's been a few years, but – it was a struggle. It's not going to be easy. And this is the last one, the last wisdom tooth hanging on. This is not going to be a walk in the park. And they're like, okay. Yeah, well, I understand. And, you know, they were cordial. They were nice about it, but yeah, not to my surprise at all. They shoot me up. They get me nice and numb and they go tugging away and 5 minutes and 10 minutes and 15 minutes and 20 minutes. And the guy still hasn't gotten the tooth out, and he's like, I don't even know if I've loosened it. And he's just so exasperated. And the other guy, his partner, is like, wow, sir, you must have a really strong mandible. And kind of going along those same lines, wow, you got some really strong bones. You know, and it was getting to the point where, you know, it started, you know, kind of complimentary, but, you know, I'm sorry, being a black man in America, eventually it started feeling a little bit like, you know, I was up there on the hoof. And kind of getting, oh yeah, this is a good strong bone right here. Yeah, it's good strong, a good bull right here. He'd be good in the field out there. It just kind of got that feel to me after a while. But they go tugging away and they keep going. And finally, the poor guy has to call in the master, the actual doctor, the actual dentist, the actual teacher there. Dude walks in, and, you know, 50-year-old man, doesn't look like anything special, but obviously he's, you know, older and obviously going to be a lot more experienced. So he looks in there and he goes, yeah, that looks like that's in there pretty good. All right, let me give it a shot here, and tells me, okay, you're going to feel a tug and it's going to be some pressure. And I felt a tug, the same tugging that I felt from the guy that was yanking at me for 20 minutes. It was a little different though. It was a little stronger tug, a little more pressure, just a little bit more than the poor guy. And I hear them go, oh, there it is. And I go, oh, that's it? Took dude 5 seconds.
that's why he's the master.
But what was the other guy doing for 20 minutes? The guy was fucking around with my tooth. He was jacking off with my tooth for 20 minutes. And I'm like, what are you? Just pull the damn thing. God.
He's a butcher. That's what he's doing.
Well,
I tell you what, when I had all mine taken out, I opted for the knockout. So I don't, I know is I started counting and I woke up and that was it.
4, 5, 10, you're out.
And my mouth's full of blood and I got gauze all stuffed in there and yeah. Ooh. Oh yeah, that hurt for months.
Oh, I can imagine all at the same time. Ooh,
the nerve pain and like, I still get pain. You know, they said it because you could get it forever because it's so close to the nerves that go through your jaw. And they're like, you know, once those come out, there's a chance that you could end up getting, you know, like you could have permanent, you know, aches and pains down there. And I do.
Yeah, I've still got a little bit of a pain in that nerve every now and then, but it's not anything as bad as what it was before I got the tooth pulled. But the guy might be a butcher, you're right, because I still have a flap down there, basically. Not where the tooth got pulled, but like in the gum line in between there where he was busy tearing and ripping and putting utensils in there and whatnot. I'm still opened up down there a little bit.
He was just a hobbyist. He wasn't actually a student there. He was just a guy who showed up, you know, off the street. Maybe it was his first day.
That might be. That might be. Yeah, it was unbelievable. I just had a feeling, though, it was going to be something like that. Because, like I said, the last time I got it pulled, and that was a professional. That wasn't at the school. That was an actual
right.
guy that gets paid to do it. And it was a big, strong guy, too. I remember he was almost as big as me. He was, looked like a pro wrestler. And it took him 15, 20 minutes to yank a tooth out of me. Still, I'm looking at this kid, and I'm looking. He's wiry, but I'm like, he might have some strength there. He might be able to pull this off. And I'm 20 minutes later. I'm like, I should have known man, this. I should have fucking known this. So yeah, old men talking about their pains and their yanked teeth.
Yeah,
that's the start of our show.
Just getting old. Getting old sucks.
Yes.
That's the way.
That could be every
allergies
podcast.
And mm-hmm. toothaches. So.
Yep.
Yeah, it's springtime. Sports are, our primary sport. We're so far removed from right now. I haven't hardly even thought about football since we did our last show.
Yeah, same here. There's so much activity that happened, right before the draft and then the draft.
Yeah.
I think everyone is taking the same kind of deep exhale and just, okay, that's over with.
Right.
Now
I'll let the national sports media talk about their same five things over and over again. Although it seemed like the national media could only talk about the Brooklyn Nets for the last month. I've never seen so much hand wringing over a 7 seed in the playoffs.
Yeah.
That had to play in. You have to play into the playoffs, play into the tournament. And I understand that because it's superstars and because it's that New York market, but man, it was starting to get to be every day I'd get in my car, and usually when I'm driving home at night, I'll listen to podcasts, but you always have those few moments before your phone kicks over, right?
Right.
When you find the show you want. So it just goes defaults to the radio. And every time I'd get in my car, somebody was talking about the damn Brooklyn Nets. And I was like, can we just be done with this?
No.
Even after they lost, that's all people could talk about.
Star power. That's all that matters. It's all – if the L.A. Lakers had found a way to win more than 15 games this year and make the playoffs –
that's all we'd hear about.
You'd be hearing about the L.A. Lakers and LeBron
And even
James.
Better, they got swept.
Yeah.
So that's a whole lot of national media coverage for a 7th seed in the playoffs that got swept.
Only because the star power and only because it's New York.
The 7th seed in the West was the Minnesota Timberwolves. I didn't hear a peep about them. They
won 2 games. Not only is it Minnesota, they were playing the Memphis Grizzlies down here.
Who got even less press. Yeah.
Right. The Timberwolves Grizzlies series. If they could have not televised any of the games, they would have done that.
They would not. They would have been on True TV.
They banished them as far as they possibly could, and then the Grizzlies win that series and go on to play the Warriors gave the Warriors all they could handle. So I'm proud of them. It's a eulogy for the Grizz. They go down. The star player, John Morant, goes down. And it was interesting because definitely. But it came the game after the Grizzlies knocked out one of the Warriors players because Dylan Brooks had a hard foul on Gary Payton II, Gary Payton's kid, the glove. That they call him the mitten, which I think is cute. Brooks had a hard foul on him, and the guy fell the wrong way after the hard foul and broke his elbow. And making Dylan Brooks the huge villain. So the next game out in Golden State, I don't even remember if they play in Oakland or San Francisco now. They got a new stadium. I know that. I think it's in San Francisco. But the next game out there, game 3 of the series, Ja Morant gets his knee twisted around, and that's the end of the series for him. They kept calling him questionable and doubtful, and they kept playing games as if he was not going to play anymore.
Right.
He twisted up his knee pretty good. There was a little bit of a push here locally to make that as if it was a revenge, something getting back at the Grizzlies for what they did to Gary Payton II. And I'm down with fighting for the cause and getting angry when it's warranted. But no, there was nothing there, unfortunately. I was watching the game. I saw the play, and it was purely coincidental, incidental, accidental, whatever you want to call it. There was no attempt to take Ja Morant out. There was no hit on Ja Morant.
Professionals playing hard.
Yep. Playoff basketball. The hit on Gary Payton wasn't an attempt to take him out, because number one, he's Gary Payton the second. If you're going to take someone out, you're going to take out one of the Splash Brothers or something. So obviously that wasn't some kind of intentional thing either. It was a hard play. It was maybe a little dirty, but it wasn't trying to take him out and injure him. And Ja Morant wasn't intentional either. But the point is, Ja Morant gets taken out, so at that point, the Grizzlies basically have no chance. But moment when they were playing the rest of the series without him, they still showed the same sort of, I don't know what you call it. I want to default to grit grind, which is what they were doing in the beginning of the 2010s when I first moved down here, back in the Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol days. But this isn't bad. It's not the same thing. It's easy to call it the same thing, but it's not quite the same. There's a lot more athleticism on this Grizzlies team. There's a lot more long-distance shooting, which was a must. They weren't hitting any threes at all when I first moved down here. And clearly, because ironically of the same Golden State franchise, it became obvious you're going to have somebody, anybody hit a three every now and then if you're going to win in the NBA. And the Grizzlies were used to try to win without hitting any threes, basically. And that's not going to work anymore. So you have to have guys that hit threes, multiple guys, and now they do. So it was weird. They fought and they kept playing even without Ja Morant. And if you remember, back in the beginning of the regular season, I told you about the Grizzlies actually setting a record, winning a game by like over 70 points.
Yeah.
And in that game, Ja Morant was not playing. He was already missing games here and there because of injuries that he had. They did that without their best player then. So there's something going on with that chemistry, with that spirit of let's get after everybody, even if we don't have our best playmaker. Like, we've seen that before throughout the years. We're old enough to say that. Everything that happened, we've seen this before. Some teams, when they lose their star player, almost rally around and play better as a team, because they don't have the option to just look at the star when things are going slow and go, okay,
well,
take over.
I seem to remember the Bucks had to do that last year in their – I think it might have been the semifinal round where Giannis went out and they just didn't play him for like the last – and they won.
Yes, they had to rally behind Middleton.
Right. Who they then lose this series that they end up losing against Boston, and they go up 3-2. They just couldn't hang on either.
Yeah, they tried. They tried, but was not meant to be. So then that's why you have that star talk about the Brooklyn Nets and the Sixers with Embiid and Harden before they went down.
That was, to me, that was the bigger story. Not was the Sixers, it was the Suns getting bounced.
That just made me laugh. As a longtime Chris Paul hater, I was just laughing my ass off at that.
Well, and after having to watch them last year and seeing watching that finals, I don't like to use this term. What a bunch of whiny bitches, man.
Chris Paul. That just perfectly described Chris Paul. Definitely. Chris Paul before that with the Clippers and Blake Griffin. And before that with the Hornets. And it's everywhere Chris Paul goes, he's a whiny little bitch, and he comes up short in the big moments when it matters the most.
Right.
That's Chris Paul's career in a nutshell, folks.
They lose to Dallas, who's looking like they're going to get swept right out.
Yeah. Yeah, go out like complete dogs on your home court to the Mavericks, who then are about to turn around and get swept by the Warriors. So,
yeah.
Go figure. But, that's why you have to have that star talk when you talk about the NBA playoffs, because otherwise you're going to be stuck talking about the Heat and the Celtics, and there's not too much star power there.
That's looking like that's going to be evened up tonight. Boston putting a whooping on Miami tonight.
Yeah, I watched the first quarter of that. That was a hard watch, boy.
They're up 31 right now.
Oh, like the Heat didn't have a field goal the first, I think, 7 minutes of the game. Like they had one point for, for 7 minutes.
Ah, so that's our NBA minute.
Rest in peace of the Grizz. Great effort. I still think their future is very bright. I think Ja is still sort of learning how to be a star, how to take, because he wants to take over at times, and when it, you know, when the team is sort of going well, and he sort of gets this my turn mentality. Okay, now it's time for me to go off and have a highlight dunk or a highlight layup. And I think he's still learning how to, you know, buy this time and figure out when the right moment is to do stuff like that. So I still think there's a bright future on the horizon for the Grizz. So we'll see.
Well, you know, and you think about it, to your point, you think about these sort of like last outposts of the NBA, where if you just get that superstar and you can sustain success, it puts you back on the map, right? You think about Golden State and Milwaukee, right? These are not the hotbeds of the NBA, but they're in the conversation now because of Giannis and Steph, and now it's a big deal. It didn't just happen overnight, though. It takes a few years, but yeah, if Memphis can, if Morant and Memphis can, sustain success, make a championship run or at least get to a finals, you get yourself back in the conversation, and then the excitement level goes up. And then now you've turned a town that's not really a sports town, that you get them all behind you.
Sure. And I love the internationalization of things that puts some extra star power that you can possibly get lucky and grab. Milwaukee, let's be honest, the Bucks got lucky, running into Giannis and having him develop into an MVP. The Denver Nuggets got lucky in the second round drafting Nikola Jokic, who is now a two-time NBA Most Valuable Player. God, no one thought that was going to happen. Like you're saying, get a superstar, just get a guy that can actually elevate the franchise and start building from there. It doesn't guarantee you're going to be in the finals, because the Nuggets still haven't made it to that level. But at least you're not the Sacramento Kings. At least you're not the Thunder. Swimming in darkness forever and ever and ever. At least you got the one.
And you can, and you can stay in the conversation. So that's, and he needs to stay in town. So stay there, get your supermax, let them put some players around you, maybe luck into a second guy, because everybody needs that other guy, right? Yeah. I mean, Steph Curry isn't out there winning titles by himself.
Right, exactly. Got the Splash Brother with him.
I mean, Giannis kind of did.
Middleton was Middleton's very key. They're not doing that.
No, not last year. And you saw what happened. He goes down in that series. I think Boston was right for the picking. If Milwaukee was at full strength, you can't be that beat up.
No, the health is obviously key.
Something woke up in the Bucks after the Bulls won that game two.
And they're like, wait a minute.
Because then the Bucks, it was over after that. Yeah. They were just blowing them out in the rest of those games. And then they get up on Boston. Shorthanded, they get up on Boston. But, yeah, it's so hard to sustain.
It's all about the health at this point.
Yeah, the long season.
I think the Warriors were a little bit ripe for the Grizzlies. If they could have stayed, if John Morant could have stayed healthy and stayed on the court, they had a shot, because they were giving it to.
You think about how much for all these teams right now, especially teams that were in the postseason or went on deep runs last year, how short that layover was between seasons.
Well, certainly.
The
NBA season is, as we talk about, is so long when you throw the playoffs in there.
Right. And then with last season ending basically in, was it August?
Oh, man. Late.
And then they turned around and it was, was it Christmas time again?
Right. They pushed off the opening to Christmas.
They did. But it still felt like a lot of, a lot of these teams, I'm sure, that's a season and a half, it feels like, worth of basketball everybody's played in a year.
And you can load manage all you want, but eventually it's going to catch up.
Correct.
Yeah, there's our NBA 2 minutes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I can, it's every once in a while you can get a few minutes of semi-competent basketball talk out of me. So enjoy it.
There you have it. Which direction are we going from here? There's a lot other things
we
to cover.
We go anywhere. You said you wanted to go on a rant. Totally switching gears, and now for something completely different.
Completely.
Doing the old Monty Python bit.
Yeah. The summer of making women hot, and the reason I talk about that and entitled the show that.
I didn't want to say that for the after show because then it wouldn't make sense what the title was of our show.
Exactly, and I'm good for that. I'm good for ranting on until the last 2 minutes of the show. Oh, by the way, the entire theme.
Yeah, we were supposed
to
talk about something today.
I was riffing a little bit off the whole Dolly Parton thing out of spite.
We were texting about that yesterday because we were like, well, we don't know what to talk about. What's the show title? You know, and these things are organic.
We'll run down the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame class of 2022. We always do that.
I will give you my stunning insights into the Hall of Fame inductees and give you my yay or nay.
All of the great rock and roll veterans that have been voted in, like Dolly Parton.
And you know what? Sometimes I surprise you because I validate somebody who you don't think deserves validation, but more often than not, we just crap on people.
Yeah.
Because that is a joke.
I'm almost
starting to think that it's like an inside joke.
As we talk about every year, there's not much rock and roll to induct anymore. You kind of,
you can't really call it that. We had talked about, like, you can't really even call it like the American Music Hall of Fame because we put in all the like the Brit rockers and we, right?
Yeah, if they chart high enough in America, then yeah, they'll make it into.
Right,
and
if you're
even if they don't,
like the Who, you know, you can't have the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame without the Beatles or the Who, you know.
But those are actual rock and rollers.
Well, the Stones, these are all, you know, these are from across the pond. So you can't really call it the American Music Hall of Fame. There's a name for this, like Popular Music Hall of Fame or something. Better than Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because they clearly gave up the ghost on the whole rock and roll thing a decade ago.
But it's kind of not even pop music because you got prog rock, you got underground stuff. You know,
there's grunge. There's, you go back and you're right.
Whole lot of that. It's basically a music Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And contributors. It's because they
and
go
friends.
Into the executives.
I don't
know. Yeah, there's everything in there nowadays. So yeah, rock and roll is definitely not the catch all that the Hall of Fame
like
is nowadays.
You're gonna have the Baseball Hall of Fame and then put Joe Montana in it.
Oh, you mean like the WWE Hall of Fame with Pete Rose? Speaking of jokes,
exactly.
There will never be a bigger joke than the WWE Hall of Fame. So whatever the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame does, it's all good because it's never going to be the biggest joke in the world. That is by far the biggest joke. Anyway, so we're ignoring women this year. So the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ignored Dolly Parton's request, if people weren't aware.
I don't want to get in. And they put
Dolly
her in
Parton
anyway.
was nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and basically
graciously,
released a...
Graciously said, I don't feel I deserve this honor. I don't want to be in it. I don't. It's a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Maybe I'll start doing rock music. I mean, it's a very tongue-in-cheek, but very gracious. Like, no, please don't do this. And they did it anyways.
Attempting to remove herself from consideration, and they gave her the honor anyway. So,
yeah.
We're going to give this to you whether you want it or not. We know what's best
for
you,
like
lady.
It.
That's right. So going off of that, reminds me
I hear she'll
of,
have quite the impressive bust, though, in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
See, I knew you were going there, and I should have been prepared, but I wasn't. So now you got to give me a second. That was right there on the tee, and I never really even paid attention. But anyway, so kudos to you for seeing the obvious, and I didn't see that.
Thank you.
But hearing that news reminded me of the Supreme Court leak several weeks ago that
quote
apparently
unquote leak.
Leak. Someone leaked
leak.
It. I don't know who.
I use that term loosely.
I have no idea who, but somebody did it. That apparently somewhere down the road, the conservative majority court is going to overturn Roe versus Wade and make abortion a state's rights thing again, where each state can basically decide to completely ban it and completely arrest and jail women who get it or even try to get it or something like that. So it's one of those deals where you look at what's going to happen in the summer. This is the era that we are living
yep.
in ever since last decade, that every summer some group is going to decide that this is our summer to rise up and go through the streets and protest and make everybody look at us and pay attention to us, because our issue is the issue of the summer. One year was all the gays and gay marriage. All the gays are marching in the streets. One year is all the blacks and Black Lives Matter and police brutality and all that. Another year was the angry white men with the tiki torches. And every year it's somebody. This year it's going to be women. It's going to be a whole bunch of women in the streets all summer long protesting about losing abortion rights. And before I even get into any kind of rant, I don't want to monopolize. Do you have a position or opinion on the issue?
I don't want to sound like I'm dancing around this, but it's a complex issue. It's not just you're for something. This is one of those where it gets to be such a gray area. This is why it's one of the few things that people still fight about. I love these issues, don't love them, but this is one of those, I hate to say it, but it's one of those like buzz issues, like gay marriage was, and you know, abortion's always been like that third rail political issue where either side kind of grabs onto it, really just there to distract all of us working class people from the fact that the Democrats and the Republicans are the same party. Right. They agree on everything else. They agree on war. They agree on all this other stuff that's going on. Right. All the quality of life things that are going wrong in the country right now. You know, does none of that makes a difference to people? Oh, we got to have this issue now. And this is going to be the hot button issue while, you know, it costs you $100 to fill up your gas tank and, you know, you can't buy groceries anymore. But let's get people, you know, let's get them all rattled up about abortion. That's what matters. Or gay marriage or whatever. That's just one of those issues, you know, that's just there to make people pretend like that we still have a left and a right in this country. Yeah, we do as people. We're most people.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, I don't think it's as polar opposite as the media would make you think. I think most, you know, people, there's your Twitter warriors. 90% of those people will never say anything to your face. You know, the keyboard warriors, right? Most people fall somewhere just left or just right of the middle. That's where, you know, because people, if they're complex enough, you know, and they think things through, they have issues that skew one way or the other. We talk about this even with some silly stuff like baseball, right? We have traditional views and we have progressive views, right?
Yeah.
You know, and it's going to be that way politically. Nobody, except for your extreme opposite ends, and those are usually your crazies, right? Your radicals and what do they call them on the other side?
Radicals.
Radicals. Your radical left, your radical right, you know? Who, that's it. You know, there's no, it's just like whatever issue each party, you know, says we're for, they'll just sort of like just go right onto it, right? Like nothing says that better right now than this stuff with Ukraine, right? Because, you know, apparently after you get told about all this stuff about how horrible like one party is because they're all pro-war, and now you got Democrats in the White House. They're all pro-war. Ah, guess what? They're all pro-war.
Breaking, I think we just sent another $100 billion to Ukraine. I think that just happened.
We can't fix any of the problems. But if you say anything about fixing the problems in this country and you happen to be white, you're now a white nationalist, racist, you know, whatever. So don't, I can't, you can say it, but I can't say it. So I also promise not to call you Jackie tonight.
Oh man, don't do it. I will absolutely call Jesse Jackson and have your ass arrested. Don't you dare.
So as it goes to abortion, it's so complicated. One, I'm a dad, right? So kids. So, and also I'm a dude. Can you still be a guy?
I think so.
Okay. Okay. I don't know. I don't know what anybody is anymore. But I'm a guy, right? So again, I can't be that person who's, I don't pass judgment. I was actually, it was an issue that had been so far off the radar for so long because it was just, it was what it was and it was legal and it was protected. I think you had a few states that pushed things way too far. I mean, when there were states like when Virginia a few years ago was like, you could get an abortion, like right up until like, till the baby was out, you could do it. And it became like a hot button thing. Because I think what you find out is in every poll, if you pay any attention to these types of polls or these numbers, show that people, more than 50% of people say we should be like a pro-choice country. But yep, they draw a line. It's like the closer you get to term, the lower the number gets, right?
Okay, now what about day 300? Okay, now what about day 301?
Right.
Yeah.
Just... So if you're telling somebody, like, it's a 40-week pregnancy, and you go, well, what about, like, 39 weeks? Well, you know, that number is, like, single digits. So clearly, there's people have a stomach for it to a point. This whole thing with this striking down, or potentially, they might not even do it, which would be ironic and hilarious if they just end up going, no, we changed our mind. But I think they're at that point now. I don't know if they can, because then it'd be like, well, then we just caved to the pressure. So then it just becomes anytime the Supreme Court's going to have an unpopular thing, they're going to say something, then somebody will just leak it, and then they'll change their mind, and then who's really doing it? So I get it. But I don't know. It's hard. It's so complicated. And I know that's not an answer, and you probably want an answer, but it really is complicated. I'm not the guy to solve this problem.
Yeah, clearly they want to do it. Clearly they all lied when they said they weren't going to do it, and now they're going to get in there and do it. It's just a matter of when. It's not that I want an answer. It's that I wanted to definitely give you the platform to, if you had a strong side one way or another, because believe it or not, with all the things that we've talked about being lifelong friends for got 40 whatever yeah. years, I don't think we've talked much about this
we haven't had a reason to, because
right.
it's just sort of for our entire lifetimes it's just that's the way it was, you know. And I mean to be in that situation, to have to make that decision to do that, you know, well, I don't even know what the right answer is, you know? I mean, if somebody could just be like, oh, I'm pregnant, I don't want to be pregnant, oh, I don't want to, you know, to make that decision for whatever reason, whether it's for good reasons or bad reasons, right? You know, if somebody is willing to make that decision to terminate a pregnancy, first of all, the kid's screwed, right? Either way.
I don't think the kid got a vote.
But I mean, if the parent is forced to have the kid, that kid's life is screwed forever.
Yeah, it'd be nice if it wasn't, but it is because of where we live, which is those extreme people that want to
right.
Outlaw abortion are also the same people that will raise bloody hell if we give any kind of aid to the person who gives birth to that child.
Right.
So it's like, what do you want? Like, what do
you
really
know,
want?
And being that I am not a hypocrite, because again, this is where it gets muddled, is the pro-choice argument has sort of been bastardized into a pro-abortion movement, right? And
yeah,
the choice seems to be the thing that people are forgetting. Like, it should be a choice, But the side that's the most vocal and mad isn't the – we know what the choice would be.
Yeah.
So then it stops being about, like, a bodily autonomy thing. So I would fall more on the side of it, that should be the choice. I think there should be a whole lot more, like, infrastructure around making a choice like that. There should be mental health. There should be – I even – hey, if you want to make a person wait 3 days to buy a gun – make them wait a few days to get an abortion. You know?
Sounds reasonable to me.
Correct.
But, which means it won't ever happen.
Correct, yeah. It makes too much sense, you know? Wait, that sounds logical. We'll never do it. But I have to be consistent here because, if you know, this is where you get the two political parties, based on whoever's in the White House at the time, to fire the arrows. If you are a person who was such as me, who was against vaccine mandates, then you have to be pro-choice.
My body, my choice, right?
I'm consistent.
Yeah.
So while I agree that I don't like the idea of abortion, you can't make people go to jail for it. But to a point, I don't like this idea. I'm in that single-digit percentage. We're in that 90-something percent. Yeah, you shouldn't be letting doctors scoop the, you know, vacuum the brains out of babies that could live on outside the womb. That's disgusting. So that's where I stand on that. Like, so viability becomes like if the kid could survive outside the womb without the mother, you should not be able to terminate. That's my thought. That's life. Don't need the mom anymore. Shouldn't just be able to walk in and be like, hey, I'm having a kid in 3 days. I don't want it. And then find somebody who'll do that for you. Cause that's just, no, that's not right. But that's where I fall.
Okay.
But I'm not like I'm, this heartbeat stuff, these heartbeat laws in these states where some of these states,
right.
Like, they're like, you can't get divorced. You don't even know you're pregnant. You can't get divorced. What do you mean? I didn't even know.
Yeah.
So no, that to me doesn't seem right either, you know? And then, the black and white of it all, where it's like we're gonna outlaw everything, and then of course they always go to the like extreme, like what if it's rape, what if it's this is we're talking like it's very small percentages, but nobody should be like, nope, you gotta have it. Oh, what are you doing?
Yeah, to your point, there's hardly anyone that says that, but there are like one or two politicians that do say,
yeah.
Not even in that, and of course those are the ones that get all the press coverage,
right.
Because that's what's going to drive
the
click.
This is what happens in Mississippi and Alabama, and you know, and
yeah,
your part of the world.
Yeah, yeah, down here with my people down in the South.
Your people? What do you mean, your people?
You mean you people?
So yeah, I mean, I gave a long-winded non-answer, but there were answers embedded in there.
The reason I'm laughing is because my entire rant and my entire lead up. And part of my show description was that I have such a personal perspective on the issue, and it's not going to be what anyone thinks. And the reason I said that is because I think, not having talked to people who, you know, really listen to our show, if there are any, I think my reputation, if, you know, pretend like we're a national podcast and there's millions of people listening, which of course
I mean,
not fact.
I would say I could predict your response to this, but then when you put it's not what I think, now I think I know, you know what I mean?
Do you know, so, or do you not know?
Well, I don't
maybe
know,
because,
you know.
Uh-huh.
That's why I'm waiting to hear. I
think my reputation would be that I'm Mr. Liberal, Mr. Progressive, Mr. Everyone has to have a right, and you cannot possibly take abortion rights away, and you can't this and you can't that, and you know, keep hope alive and all of that. And my voice starts to give even before I make the rant. The reason I'm laughing is because this is going to turn into the baseball prediction podcast or the preseason, because we have the same thought.
Did I just ruin your rant?
My rant is I see both sides. I can't. This is the one issue in the world in which I have always been like, I can't pop. You will never catch me saying that abortion has to be 100% right or is 100% the right thing to do. You will also never catch me saying that you can't have abortion be something that that you outlaw or you make
right.
I can't go either way. And the fact that I have such a deeply personal perspective on the issue should tell you just how complicated it is. You already said the word. It's a very complicated issue. I don't think there's any more complicated issue in the entire world than abortion. And if you're a woman or a man, and you think that there's no way that any man should have an opinion on abortion, that it's a woman's choice, a woman's body, and this, that, and the other, okay, I understand that. I'm still going to have my issue, and I'm still going to make my rant because I still have a voice and I still have an opinion on the subject.
You still get to have an opinion.
I do. A lot of people don't think men should even have the opinion or the choice to make that decision because it's a woman's body.
Yeah, we shouldn't even be talking about this right now.
I guess not, because it's a woman's body. And you know what? I see that point, too. I understand that, too.
There's other choices that have to be made prior to the pregnancy, right? You still got to make that other choice.
That takes two people. That last time we checked. Wait a minute. Did I say something controversial?
I think it's only happened one time, and that was in a book that some people questioned the veracity of, where a man was not involved.
We'll get comment from Mary in a moment. No, so let me just tell you about the personal experience that I have, and just to let you know just how much that this has impacted me and how much I think about it. And even then, I still can't possibly take one side or the other. My mother very seriously considered it because she was very sickly her entire life. She got pregnant when she was 20,
right.
And she had sickle cell anemia, and she died of it eventually at 32. She was so sickly she really never worked. She barely left the house. She was able to meet the man who became my father. The little bit of time that she made herself go to community college and happened to meet him, and one thing led to another, and here I am. But while she was pregnant, she actually, and I didn't know this until, when did my dad send me this letter? I have the letter in front of me. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I was going to read the whole thing, and I actually started looking at the pages. It's four pages. I started looking at it maybe 10 minutes before the show started, and I got emotional just looking at it. Therefore, I decided, no, I'm not going to actually read the whole thing. This is postmarked August 2000. How old was I at that point?
You would have been
24? Yeah.
I know
I
that
had no
because
idea.
I was 24.
Because you're, of course, 2 years, 2 weeks rather,
two
younger
weeks.
Than I am.
Yes, 2 weeks. The whopping 2 week age difference, old man.
Watch your manners. Respect your elders. So, 24 years old, my dad decided to mail me the letter that my mom sent to him while she was pregnant with me, explaining, and like I said, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but basically explaining
right.
Her doctor told her that her health was such that he actually would recommend that she terminate me. And she decided she just couldn't do it. And wanted to let my dad know that this was the decision that she was making. And I don't know exactly how my dad felt about it, but part of the reason I hate him so is because one of our many conversations when I was a kid, he basically told me I was an accident. And so I don't know if he really wanted me, and the way he treated me and abused me, I can probably guess that he really didn't ever really want me, but... the point is, from age 24 up to now, at age 46, I've now known for 22 years that my mother was this close to me not even existing. And even with that, it's still a subject that I can't really imagine telling a woman one way or another, you definitely can or have to do this. You definitely don't do that. I don't know how anyone can really look at that. I have more personal experience, unfortunately, with the topic. having financed two abortions myself when I was 17 and 19. And not, again, not knowing about my mother's choice until 5 years after that, 7 years after that, knowing that I may have made a different decision, but at the same time, I'm not gonna lie. I'm not gonna act like this is why it's so complicated. I'm not gonna act like I regret 100% paying for the two abortions for my high school girlfriend because I was so completely not ready to be a father in any way, shape, or form at the time. Like financially, emotionally, mentally, in no way, shape, or form. Was I ready to be a father? Should I have not been doing the things that would make you a father at the time? Then no, I shouldn't. But what the fuck, dude? I'm 17 years old. What do you
That's
think I'm going
correct.
To do? Let's be realistic about this. So we did the thing that it takes to become a parent, and then I made the decision to have my girlfriend terminate the two pregnancies. I'm not going to pretend like I regret it completely because I can't imagine being a father at that age and what there's no way I could have taken care of that child in any way, shape or form. I'm living in a, you know, a house of, you know, roach infested, mouse infested house of my grandmother at the time. So I don't have the money to raise the kid in a great environment. And my girlfriend was in even worse shape than that. She was living in the projects. You talk about roach infested. Oh my gosh. Not just any projects, too, projects, still in the same project building where she was gang raped, a year before she met me, but couldn't move because they didn't have any money to do anything like that. So they just had to stay there and take it every day. So we were in no condition, in no position at all to take care of a child. There's no way I can say that I regret having those abortions and paying for those abortions. At the same time, I can't lie. Do I think about the two boys? And she told me both times after the procedures that they would have both been boys. Can I lie and say I don't think about the fact that I've had two sons and killed them both? Of course I think about it. I think about it all the time, almost every day. I still think about it. That's how personal this issue is to me. And that's how crazy this debate is or this issue is, because I just can't imagine one way or another feeling so strongly about it. There's no way I could have taken care of those kids. At the same time, those kids didn't have a vote in the matter. So how fair was that? Not at all. I wouldn't have had a vote if my mother would have terminated me. How fair would that have been? This is unbelievable.
It'd be a really different show.
It would be the Jay show. It would not be the Jay and Dre show. It would be Jay by himself for an hour going on. And boy, would that be interesting. I can't believe
this podcast.
Which is kind of what it is anyway, with both of us.
Verbal diarrhea.
Man, I would never be one of those that's burning the torch and marching through the streets and saying abortion has to be illegal. You have to strike it down. I will never be one of those that marches through the streets and says you have to keep it legal no matter what. It's the right thing. It's only the woman's choice. Because again, the kid would like a choice. He would like a vote in that matter. He doesn't have one. So it's not exactly 100% the woman's choice, but at the same time, it is the woman's body. So maybe it is kind of, it's so crazy.
That's why the issue is such a, you know, it's such a hot button issue. And the sad part about the issue is the same thing it is with everything in this country is when it just has to become political. And it's just one side, the first side that can grab a hold of an issue, the other side has to automatically take the opposite position.
And then make it 100%.
And that's what it just has to be. We have to fight over this issue. And they did it with COVID, and they did it with abortion. They've been doing it with abortion for our whole lives, but now that everybody's kind of staring this thing in the face, where it's like it could be struck down and thrown back to the states, and you could probably draw a map and pretty quickly figure out what states are going to be more liberal about it and which states aren't, and turn this into some kind of a states' rights issue. It's a mess. the whole thing's a mess. And like I said, that's why, to me, like I said, I sort of lament the idea, and you kind of agreed with me a little bit, that the choice aspect of it isn't what's played up.
No, that would be actually sat down at a table and had an intellectual conversation about it, then the fact of
people screaming at each other and trying to fit things on a poster and hands off my body and all that stuff, instead of actually, let's talk about the actual choice to do something like that and stop turning it into, you know, red versus blue. Or what it's becoming, and the way, and give credit to these people who frame these things up, because these marketing people, they've really turned it into an issue of life versus abortion, instead of an issue of just choice. Implies it could go either way. You could choose to have it or choose not to, but it's not becoming an issue of choice, because choice would be down the middle. Now it's an issue of, you know, you got to have it or you got to kill it. That's where it's turned into. And that's what's sad.
But that's what gets the passions inflamed. So that's what's going to get played up, unfortunately.
That's what makes it on the news. That's what gets on TV. You know, people kill doctors, or, you know, people firebomb clinics. And, you know, they do all that stuff because that's what we've driven people to. And there's crazy people in the world.
People also read manifestos and start shooting up, you know, black stores for no reason. Then there are stores that are populated by black people. And it's like, really, this is where we're going now. So, you know, I don't know.
There's
if that's going
been
to be
crazy people, and there will always be crazy people, but we've given,
there is, but
we've given voice now to crazy people.
Voice is one thing, but that's, again, another, to me, guns is another topic that needs to have intellectuals sit down and discuss it, instead of just, hands off my guns, they're taking your guns. Every the Democrat that gets in office, they're going to take your guns. The access to guns needs to be discussed in a rational
way. The whole reason we have to send $100 billion to Ukraine is to buy them guns.
Yes, but we don't have to send that money. We really don't have to do that.
No, we actually don't. That's one of those where, oh, man, I tell you what, I'm starting this. I'm going to eventually have a list of like, my Twitter experience and the social media experience, and, like, just a list of, like, the things that you should always look for. You know, and just know that you're dealing with somebody that's not of the right mind, you know, and it's going to basically be like, how many like hearts and flags or whatever or symbols can they have after their name and in their
Ooh.
After their name, right?
Ooh.
You know, and like the person who, no matter what anybody says, their only response is, "What's your source?" Like, that's it. That's your only move. It's like, you just, and I don't engage with people, but I read these, and it's so tiresome.
Yeah, I really try to avoid those
people. Are. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't matter what you say. You can say the sky is blue. What's your source?
Source. I don't believe it. Source.
So, yeah, you know, but I think anything we've proven is that there's no, boy, there's no right answer to that type of an issue.
There isn't, but...
And cooler heads will not prevail. And that's what I would like to see, but it won't happen.
Me too. That's the thing. It's cooler heads has to prevail for those issues to ever get resolved. The violence, the guns, the shooting, the abortion.
Right.
All these things that if you sit down and
but if
and
you resolve, but if you resolve the hot button issues, then you give people actual time to realize how hard we're all getting fucked.
And you also take the passion and the inflammation away from the
issue.
How do
you drive your voters? How do you drive your voters to the polls if both sides are screwing you? You got to get them there with gay marriage. You got to get them there with abortion, right? You got to get them there with war, you know, because God forbid they actually vote their own self-interest.
You are now listening to King. That's the open, not the close. So that's the end of our live hour.
Please don't tell me we just talked for an hour for nothing.
Oh, yeah. No. Start it all over again. What were we talking about? Let's rewind the whole thing.
Oh, okay. Imagine trying to do that. Try to, like, repeat this everything.
Yeah. God. So there was NBA for about 15 minutes, and then...
So I did not know, obviously, the first part of your story about the letter. You and I have never talked about that. I knew the other part of the story.
You knew about my high school girlfriend, yes.
Yes. So I knew about... I knew, and again...
My family may not have, if they're listening. Surprise!
That's...
Well, you know. Some things you...
Again.
When would I bring that up? At the Labor Day picnic? Hey, what's going on? That's
hey, guess what?
You
won't believe what happened. The strangest thing.
That medium rare burger on the grill there kind of reminds me of the abortion that I paid for.
Sorry. Wow, that's my move.
that's your fault. You're rubbing off on me, pal. I don't think I would have done that before I met you.
It's only taken 40 years.
that's the issue. The longer we talk, more and more I creep over to your side, and then next thing you know, I'm making abortion jokes. It's all your fault.
I did not make any abortion jokes.
The white devil, that's all you are.
Yeah. All right, Jackie.
Hey. Watch it.
Because that's one of those issues. It's like when you actually you sit down and you think about it, you just kind of do the, like the Larry David meme, you know, where he just kind of goes, Yeah, you know the meme I'm talking about.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know how many other people do that. That's why I thought this would be, I guess, controversy a little bit, that I would have sort of no real
that we actually
strong
had
feeling
a,
on either side.
Like, yeah, the hard part is we actually had a, like, multi-faceted, like, we actually had a conversation about it.
Instead of just yelling talking points at each other.
We didn't just shout each other down.
With slogans.
Correct. Yeah, buzzwords, you know, or, you know, like I fall, you know, it's like, and my feeling is you talk to a lot of people about that issue, and they really sit down and they think about it, and you ask them to, you know, like really expand on things, you realize it's a lot more complicated, because you're gonna get your true believers on either side, whatever, you know, they all got to live, they all got to die. That's unfortunately what the argument seems to be right now.
I don't know what the conversation would go. I don't go around talking to people about abortion topics.
I don't either. And I don't go to rallies.
oh, Lord.
You know, yeah, I'm not. No.
Yeah. Kill me if I'm ever at an abortion rally either way. So I don't know.
I remember the first time I ever went to Minneapolis. I wanted to drive downtown and see the Metrodome. Didn't realize what a rough part of town the Metrodome used to be. This has got to be 94, 93, yep. 94. So, you know, didn't realize the Metrodome now is a nice, but back then it was a rough part of town around the Metrodome. Did not know that. Found out and did not also know that right across the street, right down the block from the Metrodome, there was an abortion clinic and we were driving by like a protest.
Oh.
Like in front of the abortion clinic. I'm guessing those were not the pro-choice crowd that were protesting.
No, that's the lunatic fringe that thinks it's their right to go to a young woman going through the toughest decision.
Yeah, yell at her.
Make
and scream,
and berate her and yell at her. Like, what the hell is wrong with you?
So, yeah, the crazy is not monopolized by one political party or one idea. And that the problem... is that we think of it in political terms. We think of it in this left-right thing, not realizing that there's just crazy people all over. And that's what I'm talking about with the sort of politicization of it, you know, that one side grabs onto something and then the other side will immediately take the opposite tack, which is why when I said, you know, shocker, if you're going to be... you know, if you're going to oppose vaccine mandates, not saying you're against the vaccine. I'm just saying you're against mandating it, making somebody do it. You've got to also be against making somebody do something else that has something to do with what they do to their body. I won't say put in their body, because it's putting in the body that got you in trouble in the first place.
Yeah, that problem has already been solved. They know how to put it in the body.
Yeah, they knew. They did that part real well.
No, I agree with your stance on that. I almost don't know if I'd really considered until we talked about it, until you basically sort of crystallized it for me, that this is still a topic or an issue, not because so many people are on fiery opposite sides of it, but because the political issue and the people that make these political decisions know that it is such an easy, hot button, fiery topic to get people inflamed, and therefore turn that inflammation into, you know, power and money on whichever side that you happen to be on.
Whatever the most cynical explanation is going to be my answer.
And that usually involves turning it into money. The money. Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. And votes. It's not just money. It's power, which gets you. It's keeping people distracted.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, that is what we're dealing with. There you go. We don't have to do any more podcasts ever, because the resolution of every issue that we bring up is going to be money.
The answer is always money.
Every question in the world, the answer is always money. Ugh, sad. Well, I really don't know where to go from there. We definitely went into an alley that we didn't know we were going down, I don't think.
Oh, wait, don't talk about alleys.
Well, it gets us back to the hangars and the some of the other ways to keep abortions going, unfortunately.
I don't know. You get back to this whole thing about the leak. That's a whole thing in and of itself. Having something like that slip out, like and then unfortunately you start thinking about the sides. You know, it's like, okay, does one side release it? Does somebody release it to get everybody all inflamed, or does somebody release it to more to like test the waters, and kind of like then by the time it does come out, everybody's sort of protested out?
Yeah, that's why I didn't really focus or bring it up to it, because I've read compelling coercive arguments for both
ways,
that the Republican aides released it to rile up their base and get them like, yeah, we're going to do it. We're going to finally own the libs and cancel abortion. A liberal justice aide released it to say, look at what these fuckers are about to do to you, to set up the summer of making women hot and make them march through the streets in Britain protests. I can see, both sides. I can see both sides. I try not to do the both sides thing. But I can see both sides in that issue as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's such a crazy topic. I really try to take, you know, a solid side on just about everything. I can't ever take a solid side on that issue.
And that's the surprising part there, because, you know, it's not like you're taking my angle or my side. There's no side.
There's
no black and white here. This is one of those issues that's all gray.
To me, it is. It is the most gray topic in the world to me. That's why it's
the perfect distraction.
We'll just hard pivot from there to go to something, anything else. We've
Hall of Fame.
Talked around it. Well, okay, we can do that.
Unless you had something else.
Oh, we've been dancing around the Jackie thing. I didn't know if you had any opinions on that whole situation.
It's so dumb. It's just so dumb.
It's a little silly, that's for sure.
I think it was I think it was, if you're Josh Donaldson, it's almost like a master class in trash talking that blows up in your face.
Too masterful.
Right. It was like too good trash talk. Because you'd like hit the nerve, right?
And, obviously.
Yeah.
He really hit a nerve.
Because he wasn't just going to say, he wasn't going to say that to anybody else than the guy who made the statement that he thought he was like the new Jackie Robinson, or he was walking in Jackie Robinson's footsteps. First of all, to even remember that 2-3 years, again, like I said, this is a master class in trash talk. But
yeah, he's going to be doing this to him 30 years later at the autograph signings. Hey, it's Jackie.
But
what are you doing, Jackie?
You just got to realize it's just not now, and not with all the hard play and like the hard tags and like all the stuff, the bad blood, you know.
Right. Y'all ain't boys.
I have no proof one way or the other that Josh Donaldson's a racist or that he was trying to be racist. He didn't walk up and just, you know, call him the N-word. He used his words and threw them back at him. And like I said, it masterfully, good job on the trash talk, but all the rest of it, terrible. The delivery, the moment, everything else. No, Tim Anderson, did he need to overreact? I don't know. Everything is such a hot button thing now. That's where Josh Donaldson's got, you've got to know better. But, yeah. It, like I said, masterful trash talking, though. I am proud, not of what happened, but to remember something. That's like crap we pull out with, like, Hall of Infamy and all these, right? Like, we mine that stuff, and we just wait for the moment to bring it out. And it's like, great, good for you. You did it. I hope you're proud. Enjoy your one-game suspension.
Which just came out tonight before we hit the air that Josh Donaldson did get suspended one game for
his... Just because you can do a thing doesn't mean that you should do a thing. I think that's from Jurassic Park. And that moment for Josh Donaldson. Just because you can, just because you remembered and you held on to that nugget and now you had a moment and you threw it out, hey, paid a price, right? You got your dig in. Everybody heard it. You know, great. Good for you.
Wise words from Jurassic Park. You didn't think we were going there tonight either. Y'all aren't boys. I think is the key or the overriding lesson to be learned from that. I don't know what Josh Donaldson thought Tim Anderson
professional,
was.
A professional baseball player. The professional part seems to be lacking here.
I mean, If that's your boy, you can say that and get away with it, and there's no issue. That's not your boy.
No.
Y'all just got finished scrapping at third base because you tried to tag him hard and bump him off the base. Y'all aren't boys. That's not your dude. Jay can do that to me because we're boys. You can't do that to Tim. That's not your boy. That's the whole lesson in that. That is not your dude. And I guess I'd have to take an opinion on Tim Anderson's feelings about it being a black person. Not that all black people feel the same way or are supposed to feel the same way.
Yeah, we don't honestly know, you know, because I guarantee, again, like you said, you and I were best friends. You say something, you would have said something to me about how you thought you were the Jackie Anderson of podcasters. Or the Jackie Anderson, the Jackie Robinson of podcasters, like you're blazing the trail, right? And you're equating yourself with what that man went through.
Yeah.
2 years later, I'd still be rubbing it in your face.
There's plenty of stuff you still rub in my face to this day. If you aren't there, you can't prove a thing. We can do that. You can. I just called you the white devil. We can do that on this show and off the air. But no, y'all can't do that. But as far as Tim Anderson's feelings about it, Yeah, no, man, you really don't have the right to be all that upset about it, because you're the one that did that.
You said it.
You said it. You 100% can get pissed at him and call him a racist if he brings it up out of the blue and says, oh, there goes Jackie Robinson. He think he Jackie Robinson because of the way he played. But if he just totally brings it up, then, yeah, you got an issue. You're the one that did it to you. You called yourself the man.
Right.
Tim Anderson is a great baseball player. He might be a league MVP. He's wearing my team's colors, so I love him for that. I love the way he plays. I love his swag. He can be a moody little bitch, though. I mean, let's be honest. He can be that. And it's okay. Some people can be that sometimes, and that's, you know, that's what he is. But yeah, for you to get that mad and that upset, there's a couple of angles that made me chuckle spinning off of that. Well, I guess three. One was just the fact that he got suspended for that, which is just completely hilarious on some level to me, that Rob Manfred is that concerned with the feelings of Tim Anderson that
game?
He needs to. Obviously he felt like he had to do something. He had to make a stand somehow, he had to make sure that this will not be tolerated. This calling somebody a name that he called himself will not be tolerated. I was just like,
so,
what?
So basically now we're you know, that was the best part was it Joe Kelly? Did you see Joe Kelly today?
No, I missed his reaction.
Joe Kelly was he's on the White Sox now, right?
Yeah. Yep.
He's complaining. He's like, man, I got 8 games for making a pouty face.
No, I didn't hear him say that, but he's right.
He's right. He's like, he got 8 games for making a pouty face. Josh Donaldson apparently makes a quote unquote big air quotes here, racist comment. Come on, you cannot outlaw trash talk. It'd be a very boring sporting environment if we did not allow. I mean, they're trying this with football with this taunting thing,
and we crap all over that. Well, I don't
we
know
absolutely
crap on
the... do, and that's why, you know.
I don't know if you felt as strong about it as me, but I absolutely hate that the
taunting
flag for looking at the guy the wrong way, looking at the sideline the wrong way.
Cassius Marsh.
Ugh.
Yeah. I understand, like, if you sack the quarterback and you stand over him and you're straddling over him and you're doing, like,
right,
a flex, then you're, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, if you're thrusting your cock in his face, that's clearly a penalty. But
that's what it's for.
Yeah.
That is what I believe they already have a flag for, called unsportsmanlike conduct.
Looking at the other bench, I don't think is under the guideline for unsportsmanlike conduct.
Unsportsmanlike conduct. No. We need to have a lesser foul now called taunting with the same penalty.
Yeah.
We're obviously just writing a check to the commissioner's office wasn't good enough.
Now we have to penalize yards to make sure, and we
right.
know what you know. We know what's behind all of that too.
So yeah, so not knowing what's in either one of these guys' hearts,
and showing themselves on television.
So yeah, I don't know what's in Josh Donaldson's heart. I don't know if he's a secret racist. I don't know if any of this stuff. Like I said, I think it was epic trash talking turned bad. Like, you trash talked the wrong guy. And he had thin skin, and he could, and it became a thing. And then Grandal confronts him at the plate, and then it turns into this bench clearing thing. And then La Russa throws some gas on the fire and says it was racist. So then it gets out of hand. So now the commissioner's got to step in for what should have just been no issue at all. So that's why I think that this is like just such a dumb story, but it's fun to talk about because that's what we do.
Yeah, it is. La Russa was the second part that made me laugh, that the arbiter of what's racist is Tony La Russa is unbelievable to me. Like, when did this happen?
What are you trying to say?
When did really? Him?
Like, he's barely awake in the dugout. How does he even know what happened?
The least woke person in the world is Tony La Russa, and he's deciding what's racist on the other side. That's one of those things where it's only because it's the guy on his team. If he was managing the New York Yankees, he would be 100% saying that it wasn't racist, and Tim Anderson was being,
come on, grow a pair.
I mean, these kids they're so sensitive. Yeah, that's 100%.
He was just commenting back on something. Yeah, I mean, if Josh Donaldson's sitting there with his little notebook of trash talk material, like these football guys used to do, right?
See, the Robin, was the lawyer in Washington, Robin Ficker, I think was his name, that would sit at Washington Bullets games and trash talk Michael Jordan and the Bulls and, like, read from their book and stuff.
Yeah.
And,
well, you would hear about, you'd hear these stories about, like, corners and wide receivers and or offensive and defensive linemen, right?
Hey, what's your wife's name, Susie? How's Susie doing?
or they would just happen to know the details about these, like trying to get into these other guys' heads and stuff. I think that's just a case of this gone wrong.
Yep.
But because we have to put a, you know, white guy and a black guy, we got to put a slant on everything now. We got to get those clicks and get those likes because you know what it's about? It's about money.
Uh-oh, money. Again.
Everything. Got to get the people on Twitter all fighting, you know, if you defended Josh Hamilton, you better unfollow me.
It's all about the money. It's all about the money.
Yeah, so La Russa just, that's just a complete joke to me. If you think Josh Donaldson is this evil, racist guy,
Don't you think you would have heard something by now?
No, not necessarily. There's plenty of them in the locker room
that
hide themselves for years. But you're going to have to come with harder evidence than him calling Tim Anderson the name that Tim Anderson called himself. Can there be, you know, tone can you infer something from the way he did it? Did he do it mockingly? Did he do it? Hey, there goes Jackie. Okay, fine. You can maybe infer something from that, but infer racism from calling him the name that he called himself. I don't understand that at all. That's just me.
It's ludicrous that Tim Anderson referred to himself and Jackie Robinson in the same sentence at all.
I can see people having an issue with that. I think that's part of his sort of, you know, swag and what makes him who he is.
But if that's what he needs and that's who he is, you have to accept that you're going to get it thrown back at you.
That I'm 100%. Yeah, you have to be able to take it. That's why he's a thin-skinned little bitch. But you know, to call himself that in the first place, that's not a problem to me because he's trying to put himself on that level mentally.
That's what he needs. That's how he gets
make himself rise to that level.
That's fine. Got it.
I'm fine with that.
He's a good player. He's a good ball player.
And the last thing was the fact that David Cohn was doing the Sunday night broadcast of the Yankees and the White Sox last night for ESPN. And everyone, of course, has their non-opinions about it because that's what it's a law that you get hired on ESPN. You have to have a non-opinion when you're doing these broadcasts. And they make sure that the opinion people are the ones that are, you know, first and Negro with Screamin' A. Smith. Those are the opinion
people. Every opinion has to read like a 10th grade book report with a whole lot of therefores. And
however,
in that case, I must
possibly
say,
I think that's Ravage that does the play-by-play. I might be wrong about that, but whoever the other people are had their non-opinions. And David Cohn actually comes straight forward with, Tim Anderson had a problem with it, and that's all I need to know. Basically saying, this ain't my fight. This ain't my decision to make if he had a problem with the way Josh Donaldson called him Jackie. That's not for me to decide. That's for him to have a problem with it. And I'm like, wow, that's
an opinion?
An opinion, and makes complete sense. Therefore, I don't know how long David Cohn is going to be for that job. I don't think that's what they hired.
Because if he's saying it's, you know, hey, that's on Tim Anderson if he wants to have a problem with it or not, doesn't mean that it needs to go to the commissioner's office.
For a suspension for calling the guy the name that he called himself.
Correct. Woo! Oh, man. So, yeah. That's like, you know, baseball's so weird, you know, with unwritten rules, you can't bunt in a no-hitter, all this bullshit, you know.
That's the other thing about La Russa. He's the king of unwritten rules, but now he's going to tell you who's racist.
I would have figured
really?
La Russa would have been on Donaldson's side.
Exactly. You know what? Privately, I bet you he is. I'll fucking bet you money privately. He's turning to his wife going, do you believe this shit? These Negroes?
Yeah.
Trust me.
To me, I maybe I'm being naive, but I'm trying to look at this and separate out like the race. People are playing that up, but if that had been if Josh Donaldson had been Latin, or if he had been black and done the same thing, would this be an issue? No.
Oh.
It's being played up because we have to play up the racism because it's all about money.
As ridiculous as it is to suspend Donaldson for doing that, it would have been over the top ridiculous to suspend like Joe Adele or Tory Hunter or some black guy for calling him Jack. That would have been the worst. That would have absolutely been crazy.
Oh man. Okay. Well, that there you go. See, we worried we can't fill a show.
No. Wait. Yeah. Well, I mean, worried, but at the same time, we know we're gonna fill it.
That's when he texts me. He's like, "You ready to talk about nothing for 2 hours?" He was ready to talk about nothing, and I was like, "For 2 hours?"
Yeah, yeah, hell yeah, that's what we do. We still got a half hour left, and we still got stuff we haven't gotten to. So, to your point,
man. Well, let's see. I'm reading through the description here. Well, you let her off with your. Do you want to talk about the Reds? They still have a chance, or
how god awful was that pick? My god,
that's all time.
What the hell was I thinking? What the
What's
hell?
Even more all time is how hard I crapped on that when you did it.
Oh, instantly. And then when we saw each other live in Chicago, continued to. And I'm like, give him time. Come on. It's been 3 days. Yeah, no, I just wanted to, you know, take the credit for making one of the worst. At least I didn't pick him as a wild card team or playoff team. I just said
right.
They were going to.
Yeah.
Contend. They're not contending at all.
I believe I said they were the worst team in baseball.
And they, yeah, very well.
They are team. The worst team in baseball. Yeah, 293 now winning percentage.
Oh, hey. It's awful. It's bad. I just want to, you know, I don't want it to seem like I shirk away and run away from when I make really, 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 really bad calls. And 12 and 28,
yes.
And they lost. Did they lose tonight?
They lost tonight. 29. Yeah, Cubs beat them tonight.
12 and 29 is a really, really, really bad call.
17 games under 500, 41 games in.
12 and 29. No one's won less than 14. They're the only ones that are down there at 12. One of the first guys that I was praising and saying, you know, that it was going to lead them to contention was the second baseman, Jonathan India. He's been hurt for most of the year. So that's
because you praised him.
Because well, it's not like Alex Reyes. It's not like I went to his game and into my.
Yeah, I gave you some crap for that today, too.
Yeah, he's apparently not going to pitch this year at all.
You killed his. You talked him up so hard, you ended his career.
It's hard not to talk someone up when you sit there and watch them break the all-time Pacific Coast League record for consecutive strikeouts in a game. I'm sorry. I saw that live. I was like, holy shit, this motherfucker is about to destroy everybody.
Good. I get it.
And he destroyed his arm, apparently, doing that.
So that was what you let off. We didn't have to go on about too much. I'm not going to make you take the L, you know, too hard. So, yes, that we'll just leave that up there as an all-timer. We've both had terrible calls. So
that was definitely a terrible call. I also wanted to
talk about basketball. All that's left on the list is Hall of Fame.
Just getting off of baseball real quick, and then we'll move on to that. I also wanted to cry about my fantasy team, which was in first place for like a couple of days, and now it's like seventh. Because speaking of injuries, here's a list of pitchers that I have on my team and might have to get rid of all of them because they all decided to get hurt all at the same time. Remember I told you I was looking at Max Scherzer in my draft and said, well, he's starting off with a hammy, but he's still Max Scherzer. I'm going to draft him anyway. Looked at Clayton Kershaw and say, yeah, he was a little banged up last year, but you know what? That's still Clayton Kershaw. I'm going to take him in the middle rounds. I'm going to take Jack Flaherty as an injury risk, and eventually he's going to make a comeback. This Mike Clevinger guy coming back from injury last year. You know, he used to be really good with the Indians, Guardians, Cleveland Baseball Club. I'm going to take a chance on him. And as the season went on, there's a kid down in Miami former Oakland A prospect. He's looking really good. It's Jesus Luzardo. Yeah, I'm going to pick him up too because he's looking. All these motherfuckers are hurt. All of them. Like, what the hell happened? At the same time. At the same damn time, all these people got hurt, except for Flaherty, who hasn't played this year yet, and they still don't know when he's going to play. But those other four, Scherzer and Kershaw and Luzardo and Clevinger, all, like, went on the DL within the last, like, week and a half. All of them. Like, my entire rotation. Five fucking guys on the disabled list, on the injured list, at the same time. How the hell did I pull that off?
That's hard to do.
I wasn't trying to do that. I'm looking at they were all pitching great. Like, they weren't pitching okay. They were all, like, kicking ass. Every last one of those guys were pitching great and had my ERA and WHIP down pretty much at the top of the league. And that's not the case anymore because, you know, eventually you got to pick up guys to take their place and try to fill in. And the guys that I pick up haven't been doing as well. So in addition to that, Jonathan Indian, who I just talked about getting hurt, was also injured. Marcus Semien was my second round or third
ice,
round
pick. Cold as ice.
And he is hitting, let's see, 182. That's actually up because he's on a four-game hit streak. I'm sorry. So it was much lower than that. It was in the 160s.
He's actually hitting 300 for the last, like, week.
Yeah, you know why? Because I finally started benching his ass. That's why
he got up to 182, yeah.
To get up there. Still with zero.
He'll be fine. He'll be fine.
When? I'd love to know when. I really would.
Once the weather warms up.
So that's my fantasy team. It was looking really promising for a while, and not so much now. So.
Oh, okay.
So how's our fantasy team looking?
Not good.
Oh, uh-oh.
Pitching's fine. Hitting's gone a little cold. So
yep.
We've dropped a whole lot, but as I look at the categories, it's like one of those where you have a hot week and we jump way back up. So you just got to get hot here quick.
Well, and when you do, tell me who it is that's getting hot so I can go possibly go pick them up in my...
No, you'll kill them.
You're right. I probably will. That's another... remember I told you I picked up Sean Murphy? And you talk about ice cold. Yeesh.
Yeah.
But he'll rebound because I cut him. So he'll be fine.
Good. Good.
Yeah. 2022 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame class. Are you ready? This is
long list. I'm ready for these insights. I know we briefly talked about the nominees, but I actually don't know who's in other than Dolly Parton.
Oh, okay.
Doesn't even want to be in.
You've heard of all of them except for maybe a couple, and a lot of times you've heard of some of the guys and girls that they put in as like early rock or prog rock contributors I've never heard of in my life. So
sure, right. So I can usually give you some insights into where they're going because there's some where you're like, I have no clue what this is, and I'll be like, oh, yeah, no, that's a good one.
Yeah, there's a couple of them I've never heard of in my life, and maybe you have and maybe you haven't, but we'll see. This is a very long list, and they start off their write-up on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame webpage with the same verbiage that they used last year, and so you already get a sense of what they're sort of going for and what they're trying to tell.
Let me guess, is this a very diverse class?
Quote, it's a diverse group of extremely talented individuals and bands who have had a significant impact and influence on rock and roll, the music that connects us all.
That's our buzzword now. That's the buzzword.
Diverse.
If you cannot get diversity in, you're failing.
They're only a few years away from just saying woke, but this is a woke class of musicians that we're inducting this year. They're just trying to go there. They really want to go there. Okay.
I believe it's the same rule that we have for when we talk about sports. We don't care. Can you play? That's all we care about.
There you go.
Can you play?
Can you get it done? That's all that matters.
Don't care what color you are. Don't care what orientation. Can you play? You want to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Are you any good?
Are you good at music? That would be a good thing. Here is the class. I don't even think it's in alphabetical. I don't know what order this is.
It's just there, yeah.
It's just a bunch of names. Here we go. Pat Benatar.
All right. Sure.
I like it. I'm a fan. I'm a Pat Benatar fan.
One of those to me that I'm almost like, what? That she's not in already?
Right.
So
she's a legendary hard rocker from the 80s. So yeah,
definitely. So perhaps a little overdue, but yeah, no. Pat Benatar makes total sense to me. If there's a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I have no problem with them having Pat Benatar in it.
All right, good start. Duran Duran.
Sure.
All right.
That makes total sense. They've been around for a long time. They were big in the 80s. They had a bit of a resurgent back in the 2000s area, you know, kind of like a lot of things did, like get that little nostalgia kick. Oh, yeah, I remember them. It's a lot of hits, though. You want to talk about a voluminous playlist. Whether you like them or not, they were all over the radio for a very long period of time. And it's one of those, I will say to their credit, that they don't feel dated, right?
But they haven't been trying to like reinvent themselves and.
Right, but you could listen. What I mean by that is you don't like.
Oh, the music itself isn't.
The music has aged fine.
Yeah.
There are some bands that, you know what I mean, where it's like, it wasn't like those, some of those synth pop bands, you know,
right,
were consequently not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. No, there it seemed like with Duran, there was actual talent there, so good for them.
Yeah, that's my first impression when I saw it, was add that to your list that you were talking about earlier, influential Euro rockers. Like, they're all in.
Yeah, they definitely, so far they're 2 for 2.
Okay. Well, we'll see about the next one. Eminem. That Rock and Roll Hall of Fame star, Eminem.
Song? Is he getting in for one song? That's what I want to know.
Probably.
Because everybody knows, it's like the Super Bowl. He played his one song.
Yeah, he play your hit. Play the hits. That's what you're there for.
Boy. I'm not on board. I understand, especially based on where they've done, what they've done with the rap genre in years past. So I understand. I still don't like it. I mean, why don't we just have a rap Hall of Fame?
We do. It's called the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
We do now. So if those are the criteria, then sure, why not? Maybe I'm just being a little bit like holding too hard and fast to the actual name of the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I've abandoned that. It's really not the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame to me anymore.
But for the other, you know, acts that they've let in from the rap genre, sure, why not?
Yeah. I joke about the getting in for the one song. It's, I don't think it's for the one song. I think it's if you're going to honor like the top hit makers of rap, which they have been doing, Public Enemy and NWA and Run DMC, et cetera, then yeah, you're going to have to put Slim in at some point. He's one of the most influential hit makers of all time.
Right. And that was, again, where it seems like they're going with the rap artists are, most of them have had like a mainstream hit that would just play on top 40 radio.
No, the NWA did not. You couldn't play any of their songs on the radio. Run DMC, you could
definitely
say that with the rock, with the Walk This Way.
Yeah.
But like Public Enemy, I don't know about that.
Probably not.
So I think they're just trying to like take the top
diversity,
like, in the most diverse group of artists.
Yeah.
Like the top like hit makers of rap, like the guys that actually did it for like a decade plus, not just flash in the pans. So you have to put Eminem in on that level. What just kind of blows me away is thinking about his actual material outside of Lose Yourself, which is most of it is not just like with profanity. That's you know, profanity isn't that big a deal in and of itself. It's like hurtful and homophobic and angry. Like his first three albums, like he set the world on, when I say on fire, I'm not trying to talk about the hit making. I'm talking about like he went scorched earth. Like he took down his mother, called her all sorts of names, talked about that she had Munchausen syndrome and made him sick on purpose and did all these things. And he talked about the people that died, and she said, "I wish it was you that died instead of it." Like he took everything in his life and like splayed it out there for everyone,
right?
And had just some of the most like angry, hurtful lyrics you could imagine, and that just kind of blows me away that that's going to be sort of immortalized and put on a pedestal and like. You really had to have been voted in by your peers, by the other musicians, because there's no way in hell you're getting a board of, you know, old white people sit down to elect this Hall of Fame and decide on Eminem, because they, I promise you, the people inside the boardroom at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, their like stomach was turning thinking about him, because
There's nothing I think less about in my life than who actually votes on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So I don't actually care. But somebody did. Somebody looked at it. But, again, that also kind of explains why he pretty much disappeared. Once all the demons were out of the closet, he had nothing left to say.
He was out of material.
Yeah. And now you just play one song everywhere you go.
Play your hit. He's going to play that hit till he dies. And you know what? It's good for him. You know, he's got one. He's got one more hit than I do. All right. Got a long list to get down and 18 minutes to do it. Eurythmics.
I'm not on board. I know who they are. I mean, and then Annie Lennox goes on and has her own solo career for a while too, but not for me.
I'm a fan of the music. I'm more of a, it sounds like I'm much more of a fan of the music than you are, in general. They got the one that they can play for the rest of their lives with Sweet Dreams.
Sigh. It's not the Hall of Ite.
So they're the Bobby Abreu of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That they're pretty good. They're the Hall of Pretty Good.
Yeah,
not necessarily Hall of Fame.
They could open for the Hall of Fame concert.
I'm a bigger fan, but I feel kind of similar to you. Like the Hall of Fame, I like them, but I don't know about that. All right, Dolly Parton, we kind of talked about.
She don't even want to be there.
Oh, that great rock and roll star, Dolly Parton.
There's your breakdown.
There you go. She doesn't even want to be in it.
She doesn't want to be there. What is she getting in for?
For what everyone else is getting in for. American Hitmaker. That's what it's, the American Hitmaker Hall of Fame.
Did she cross over from country to mainstream? Yes. Right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
She had those hits that played on radio. You know, she definitely made the jump. She didn't quite sell out. She didn't go like full Taylor Swift and just sell out, you know, start, you know, or backdoor her way in, you know, and do it the Shania Twain, Taylor Swift way. But she doesn't even want to be there. That's all you need to know.
Oh, there you go. There's the big breakdown. All right, next. Lionel Richie, the Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. Lionel Richie.
Man, you know, from a pop standpoint, sure, because he was, again, he's one who was just all over the 80s, tons of hits, right?
That album was a monster with All Night Long on it. Whew.
Yeah.
That was everywhere.
All Night Long, Dancing on the Ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, right, which is memed to death.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll give it to him. He gets in.
Even though it's rock and roll.
Even though I don't, what do you quite classify him? Pop? That's light pop too. That's like light pop.
Yeah, very.
I mean, that's like, you know, Lionel Richie, and coming up after Lionel Richie, we have some Richard Marks for you. I don't see Richard Marks, unless he's on the list.
Not this year.
Not this,
yeah, hell, he might already be in.
Okay. Did he play in a band? Was he in a group earlier than that too?
Commodores.
Right.
He's a brick.
Yeah,
he wasn't in by that point.
But yeah, I'll get him in on that.
Okay. All time American hitmaker, writer, singer,
right. So,
producer, did
yeah,
it all.
He's got more cred than some of the other people on that list. So I'm okay. I give Lionel Richie stamp of approval for the quote unquote rock and roll Hall of Fame.
This person, I know her, and I know her, the song that she can play the hit, but I'm not familiar with her work in general. You might have to give me help on this if you know more of her work. Carly Simon.
Oh. Wow, when we talk about light. But first of all, it's the Wayback Machine, so we're going back to the 70s. That's like the one hit, you know. I'm sure my mom will give me crap like she did last year with Regina Spektor.
Like we're supposed to know the greatness of
Regina
Spektor.
Yeah, like I'm supposed to give a shit. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Carly, is this a diversity hire?
Yeah, there's not too many other ladies on here, so I think you might be onto something there.
All right. I'm not, yeah.
You're so vain, baby.
Yeah, she plays her hit.
Right. You hear her name with, you know, all the other 70s songstresses and hit writers and hit makers.
Are the Carpenters in?
Right.
I mean,
she's in that group, Carole King and all that.
We're losing our audience right now.
Losing? Are you kidding?
But, well.
If you're still
like, who are they talking about?
You have to be of a certain age to even know who these people are. Speaking of which, Harry Belafonte, the great rock and roller, Harry Belafonte.
Play
great
a song, Harry.
Roller.
Oh, my God.
They're like, come on, we want to go.
Yeah. Well, I think you just got my answer. It was about 30 seconds.
Of laughter. good for you, Harry. We're not trying to shit on you, but good for you. Okay, here's a name I have no idea who it is, and I don't know if you do either. Elizabeth Cotton.
No clue.
Okay. That might be one of those music contributor deals.
Yeah, maybe she's a producer or something.
If you want to go on the website and read more
don't
about
care.
These people, you can do so. These people I'm extremely familiar with. I don't know how much you're going to know who they are, but Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis.
Okay, are they getting in together or separately?
They are one of the greatest producing duos in R&B history. They did it together. They started out as part of The Time, the band with Morris Day.
I know who they are.
Oh, okay.
Only because of you.
I talk enough about Minnesota Funk. You should know Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis.
Morris Day, Time. Well, that all ties to Prince. So,
mm-hmm. Yep.
Got it.
But they broke off from that and like on their own were like the some of the best producers. Like Janet Jackson's whole fucking career, she can basically owe to them.
I'm guessing Janet's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she is.
I mean, she should be. If Carly Simon's in.
All right, I'm definitely unfamiliar with the work of Judas Priest. I don't know if you have any opinion on that. At least they're rockers.
Yeah, they are. They were hard rockers. I mean, they were like heavy metal, but okay. Like by today's standards, they'd just be rock. Sure. They get in on name recognition. I wasn't a fan, but I was aware of them. They were there. I mean, if you were watching, you know, Friday night videos or, you know, when whatever it was that would be when videos would be on, like on channel 66, remember when it was just all videos there for a while? Yeah. Yeah, every once in a while you'd see this, like a Judas Priest one come up, and they were definitely around, but they have as much cred as anybody else who we questioned. So, yeah, sure, why not? They're in.
I missed their videos back then because I was watching Eurythmics. And Pat Benatar.
Yeah.
And Lionel Richie. Who brings us all back to all those people.
Same time frame, though.
Yeah, I have no recollection. I definitely wasn't into that type of music back in the early 80s. So.
Got it. Yeah, me neither. That's why it's like I was aware of them, but I don't really know them. That makes sense.
Yeah, that's how I am. I'm aware of the name. I couldn't possibly name a song by them. No. I have no idea who Alan Grubman is. Do you have any idea who that is?
Grubman?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. I have a very slight idea about Jimmy I think it's Iovine is how his name is pronounced. He's one of the top music executives of all time. He's responsible for many great acts, just a good top talent scout, and might even be responsible for Eminem. That might be his fault. I'm just trying to think of the names that I can put together.
So
with
he's
Jimmy,
he's just like a talent guy.
Like a top executive, music executive type guy. Yeah. And finally, I should be familiar with her work, but I'm not. Sylvia Robinson. I don't know her songs, but
who?
Yeah, she's old R&B singer, like real old. And I think she went on from there to be a music executive as well.
Got it.
So.
Well, they weren't joking about the diversity.
Yeah. There's very small the descriptions of these people if I go down the page. So I'm not going to read them all, but I do want to read the ones that we had no idea who they were. So just to give us a very small bit of education about these artists. All right. Alan Grubman, a founder of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Well, there you go. That explains it.
Oh, gee, way to pat yourself on the back.
Changed the music business. He has represented rock and roll's biggest stars, including Bruce Springsteen, U2, Sting, John Mellencamp, Madonna, Lionel Richie, Elton John, Lady Gaga, and many more. Represented? So is he's an agent? Okay. He's a founder of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, so of course he's going to get in. So that makes sense. Jimmy Iovine has donned many hats as he's crafted one of the more unique success stories in the business of rock and roll. That's very opaque. Okay, so moving on from there, Sylvia Robinson.
The janitor?
Many hats. That would be one of them if he did that. Sylvia Robinson, label executive, producer, songwriter, rapper, the original hip-hop mogul. Sylvia Robinson reigned supreme at the birth of hip-hop's commercial success. She co-founded Sugar Hill Records and propelled an unknown subculture into the mainstream, setting the stage for rap to grow into the most lucrative music business of today. Okay, I forgot that she also co-founded the Sugar Hill Gang label and Sugar Hill Records and all that. So she did write songs before that as well. But so that's Sylvia Robinson, and then Elizabeth Cotton. Elizabeth Cotton's intimate recordings and performances inspired generations of artists, and her technical prowess and musical inventiveness influenced countless guitar players. Yeah, diversity. That's
awesome. Say nothing by saying a lot. That's what you got right there.
She played guitar uniquely is basically what they said.
And
that gets you in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So that's the equivalent of the linebacker for the New York Giants in 1954 who made two tackles in the
NFL tackles in a conference championship game, and now he's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
That's it. Congratulations, Elizabeth Cotton. And congratulations to all the other rock and roll Hall of Famers. A very, very large class.
Diverse.
Year. That's
diverse.
Very, very diverse and very large. Usually it's only about 6 or 7 names. I was like 12. So they really stuffed them in there.
Yeah, it just shows you, well, first of all, how thin they're getting on this now, right? I mean, you know, they got all the big ones,
14.
I'm sure, out of the way.
14
up front.
Names.
Yeah. And I get it. You got executives and janitors, you know.
Jacks of all trades.
Yeah. They've done it all. It was
more many hats.
They're going to start putting in the roadies.
Groupies?
Maybe.
Starship Annie fucked over 400 rock stars in her lifetime.
She's the Will Chamberlain
groupies.
Of groupies. Oh, man. Oh,
that would be our hall. That would be our.
There are
rock and roll
more letters after her name for all the diseases that she has contracted over the years.
That's our Rock and Roll Hall of Infamy. That's what we're going to get into when we.
Oh,
do our
my
next...
God! Could you imagine if we did that and we started putting in the worst acts? Or like the one hit one. We can't even say the one hit wonders because it's like. Half these acts have one bit.
Lay your hit. Lay your one hit. That'll get you in.
That's always fun, though. We like to crap on. We crap on all of the Hall of Fames.
Yes. We don't do them individually like that, but
that's why
they're not as
no.
They're not as fun to do it in sports. Just to go down all the old players that they put in. It's like who? What?
Well, we do talk a little bit about the big ones for us, the football and the baseball one, when they happen, you know,
a little bit.
Or some of those dumb Hall of Fame discussions. But we don't really get too deep into the Hall of Fame discussions just because we realize what a joke it is.
Yeah. No purpose for us. We
right.
have our
like,
much,
you
much
know,
better
always
Hall
got that, always got that simple, like, when you ever watched that player play, did you ever feel like you were watching a Hall of Famer? And
most of the time the answer
there,
is no.
Right. And when I was sitting there listening to Here Comes the Rain Again, I didn't go, man, this is some Hall of Fame shit right here.
That is the work of an all-time rock and roll Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame, baby.
Come on. All-time.
I just named the hit because that's I know there's more. I know
Sweet
they had
Dreams
some
is
others.
The hit. That was.
Oh, well, yeah. So there you go. There's two. I always default to Here Comes the Rain Again.
Oh, interesting.
For some reason,
Sweet
when
Dreams
I think of
like
the
Eurythmics,
that's the song I think of. Right. I don't know.
I love Here Comes the Rain Again, but I also love Sweet Dreams. I think they were both very good.
Well, they must.
Very
no, that's it. I changed my mind. They have two, so they get in.
All right, we did fill 2 hours easily.
We did,
and
a very diverse 2 hours.
Very, we really did spray to all fields in that episode. No idea when our next show will be. As our
probably in 2 to 3 weeks.
Probably as our time gets ready to run out here.
Yeah, because what was the draft? When was the draft? About a month ago.
Yep.
Usually from the draft to the show that we do after the draft, that's usually our longest sort of layover, you know.
That was one more really small thing that I actually had for tonight if we're going to get to it. It was about going back to the draft. Just I read something by Peter King a couple of weeks ago that I just found interesting. I was going to bring it up. Just about that number one pick, that kid, Trayvon Walker. Peter King wrote about the fact that you know, we talked about how unhyped he was. He kind of came out of nowhere to be drafted number one by the Jaguars.
Right.
Peter King did the research, and he wrote this. The Southeastern Conference coaches vote all conference, first and second teams. They vote for 4 first-team defensive linemen and 4 second-team offensive linemen. Trayvon Walker, the first pick in the 2022 NFL draft, did not make the first or second team on the defensive line among the 8 player shows.
A-.
Pro Football Focus honored its 2021 All-Americans with 4 defensive linemen on the first, second, and third teams and 4 honorable mentions. 16 defensive linemen. Walker was not one of the 16.
Oh my God.
I'm the traditional associated.
Picking. Sometimes though, there's a reason why you're picking number one in the draft.
That's all the time.
That's right.
On the traditional Associated Press All-America team, with four linemen named on each of the first, second, and third teams, Walker was not one of the 12 defensive linemen selected. I'm just bringing this up just to say, you know, this kid, he better do something.
He's going to the Hall
of
Fame right now. We just stamped this kid's ticket to Canton.
And not the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame either, the actual one.
You know, I wouldn't put it past the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame at this point.
No, the WWE Hall of Fame will put him in somehow.
Oh, yeah, if he shows up for SummerSlam or something, he's in.
Yep. And then get Tombstone pile driven by The Undertaker or something.
Hey, you know, Goldberg and The Rock, didn't they try their hands at football?
Yes, that's why they had to go into pro wrestling, because they weren't good at football.
So, Trayvon Walker.
Oh, is that what that the... That the
Vince is like, call me, kid, call me.
At the career path, we're already calling it. Going to be out of the NFL in 3 years and going right.
It'll be in the WWE Hall of Fame by about the time we retire.
Mark it down, folks. If you hear this after show and put it on the calendar, put it on your Google calendar. 2027, he'll be in the WWE Hall of Fame. All right, we're about done. We're in the after show. I don't have any outro music, so we are literally out of topics now.
That was fun.
Yeah, definitely covered a lot of ground there, and I got a little more intimate and personal than I thought I would, but there you go.
Kings of non sequitur.
Indeed. All right, we will talk to you somewhere down the road in a few weeks as we get into the month of June, as the summer rolls on, the summer of making women all hot and bothered and not in a good way. He is Jay. I am Dre. This has been Kings of Non Sequitur, the off-season version of and much less detailed a podcast. Unless you had something else?
No, I'm good. I think we covered it all.
I went into the close and I forgot to ask if you had anything you wanted to get to. But yeah, I guess that'll do it for us. We will thank you for listening to all of that, whatever that was, and we will talk to all of you again in a few weeks.